Presto.
Presto.
Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This TMT Open Forum is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by KB8VGL, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. This TNT net is conducted to provide information pertaining to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your NCS for this session is supposed to be Terrence, KJ4ZMV, who is located in Louisville, Kentucky. And my name is Suzanne, N1SUZ, who is serving as your moderator for this session and probably as the NCS as well. And I'm located in Danbury, Connecticut. Before starting, may I ask, is there any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled before we proceed? Okay, how about any birthday stations? Anybody out there celebrate your birthday? Come on aboard so we can help you celebrate. All right, no birthday stations, or maybe everybody's a little too shy to tell us about that. So let's begin our program tonight, which is buying your first radio. Terrence was supposed to be our guide tonight, but we'll wait on him a little bit because I'm sure that he will be here soon. And other than that, let's talk about what we should consider when we do buy our first radio. All of us here are ham operators, and obviously we have some sort of a radio system. Some of us may just have a computer and work on Echolink and do that. But a lot of us, when we start out as amateur radio operators, get a variety of different radios. And with all good reasons. There are a variety of different reasons. And what you need to decide is what you want to do with your radio. So let me drop it here, and then we'll start our program. So what makes a good first radio? It depends greatly on two things: what you will use the radio for, and your budget. People get amateur radio licenses for many reasons these days. Some are interested in emergency communications so that you can help out areas such as Saturn and Aries, which last week we had talked about. And some are enjoying technical hobbies. We're building things, and they like to build their own radios and cutting-edge digital modes, which are also appealing to a lot of people. And others just like to talk. And still, some are lured to the hobby by tales of DX or from the shortwave broadcast bands they listen to as children or even as adults. Keeping all these things in mind, different radio choices can be examined for their usefulness. Let me drop it here. So first, what I would think most people do is buy an HT, handheld FM transceivers. They tend to be fine transceivers for light emergency communications and public service events. The limited power of a handheld also means limited range, which may be okay for in-town events, but problematic for more widespread or regional events. Handheld range can be extended with aftermarket antennas and amplifiers. In fact, a good aftermarket antenna is recommended for emergency communications, even if you can access the local repeater just fine on the stock antenna. A more efficient antenna may allow you to use lower power and give you a greater simplex range. Handhelds don't offer much in the way of technical challenges either. They are mostly just buy it, turn it on, use it kind of thing. I suppose that one could build a few items such as an antenna, packet interface, or maybe a solar charger for their battery. But there are only so many technical problems and projects you can squeeze out of a handheld. One thing that handhelds are not good for is rag chewing. The reasons are obvious to the seasoned operator. Short battery life, limited range, and most modern handhelds get pretty hot, especially when running from an external power source. You wouldn't think a handheld would have anything to do with DX, but there are a lot of people who use handhelds with DX and dual band satellites, etc. Operating satellites with a handheld typically means standing outside in the elements, which may not be appealing to some. There's also Echolink. While calling Echolink DX is up for debate, the fact that one could walk down the sidewalk in the U.S. and have a QSL with a ham operating from Germany can't be denied. And we know that on Echolink we have a lot of people on South cars that come in from foreign countries as well. I see someone from Italy today on here as well in their repeater system. And let me drop this for now and ask if anyone out there would like to comment on handheld transceivers. Come on aboard now.
Six vectors, Susie.
Very good, Gordon. Come on aboard. We need your help.
Well, I don't know how much help I can be, but good evening, everybody. Gordon here, KY6V. I had to sit back and laugh a little bit about your comment about handhelds. You just turn them on and use them. You know, some of these handhelds, Susie, have so many frills, so many bells and whistles, so many options that can be programmed into it, that it's a nightmare. They're small in size. The buttons that you need to push are very dainty, not designed for somebody with a big paw. And you better carry the instruction manual in your back pocket. If you're doing the same thing every day, you don't have to worry about it. If you want to change something, you want to change the offset, you want to change the PL tone, you better have your book with you, because some of these are really tough. I wanted to mention a little bit in buying equipment, if I may, here, Susie. Let me buy a nickel for a second. I was looking at your subject matter tonight, and I was sitting back and sort of reflecting. You know, in the good old days, things were sure done differently than we do today. You have an aspiration that you want to buy a new piece of equipment for a particular application. In the old days, you would thumb through the QST magazine for the advertisements. You'd look at some of the local catalogs that were available. Henry Radio was a big one. Back in the days that I'm referring to, I don't think AES was in posture yet, but the AES catalog today is a good one for browsing. It's like the Sears and Roebuck catalog, you know, the want list. So what you would do is you'd go ahead and identify something that really looked sharp and it got your interest. Then you'd get on the air and you'd start talking to people and find people that are using that particular equipment and get their input. Today, it's internet, it's search, it's Google, it's Yahoo. You can come up to the answer to just about anything, and you've got a lot of user comments on new equipment that are out that you can sort of base some judgment on. I will also say that you've got to be very smart and read in between the lines, because, you know, the PR people for these manufacturers that are building and selling this equipment are pretty sharp dudes. And they put in some of their comments in the user comments, too, and you don't know if it's a salesman talking to you or a real honest ham that just bought it. Back to you, Susie, KY6V. Over.
Well, thanks very much, Gordon. You point out very good points there, because really, these handheld transceivers, these HTs, are really amazing little machines. And back in the old days, when you just think of walkie-talkies and you turn on your walkie-talkie and whatnot, it was simple. These transceivers, HTs, are amazing. And what I really enjoy finding out about these days are the satellite connections and trying to monitor the transmissions from the satellites, which I never really thought before you could do. But I've heard all sorts of, like Brady, he said he and his dad had listened to the satellite transmissions. I think it's really neat. And it's amazing that people think they have to buy these very expensive transceivers and radios to be able to use and listen and talk. But you don't. A simple HT will do the trick. So let me call out to anybody out there who has an HT or bought a HT, and maybe you'd like to comment on your HT and what you think about them. Come on aboard now.
India Golf Hotel.
WKD.
Come on aboard.
Okay, there was a double there. I don't know if you were referring to me, Miss Susie. But yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Gordon there. I have a couple different HTs. I have a HTX-202 and a 404 from Radio Shack. Those two compared to my Yaesu VX7. The one being built in like the early 90s and the other one being built, you know, in the 2000s, I guarantee it's a lot more complicated and with the programming and stuff like that. So, like Gordon said, you have to read between the lines to figure out what you're trying to put in there. So, but that's just my comment there. So, KB's your ID.
Well, thanks, John T-Bone. Before you go, let me ask you a question, though. Do you think that the HT is the best way for a beginner to get into the hobby?
I'm going to have to agree, yes. It'll expose the new ham to repeaters. It'll expose them to, you know, different, sorry about the noise in the background there, but various other people that have been in the hobby as long as most of us have. They can at least talk to them and say, hey, look, you know, this is what I'm trying to do, you know. They get their opinions on different stuff to where to go next. But, yes, I personally think an HT is the way to go, because right now I was just looking in a catalog, in the AES catalog, and the new Wushan radio, HT radios that are out now are costing like $119 with two meters and 440 in it. So that's, you know, that's a new way for a new ham to get on there. So at least ask questions of, you know, where to go and talk to different folks and see how things are going. So KB3IGH.
Well, thanks very much, T-Bone. Yes, and actually I have one of those radios that I picked up recently, and it's a great radio. The reception is great, too. And for people who do get HTs, the ARRL has a repeater directory, too. So not only can you hit your repeaters, because I think most cities and towns do have a repeater, but you can also travel with your HT and hit other people's repeaters. And I, in fact, hit a repeater outside my area through Echolink, because the repeater that I was talking on in a different state had an Echolink connection. So that was really kind of neat. So let me drop with you. And you doubled with KJ4WKD, Jim. So let me bring Jim aboard. Come on aboard, Jim.
Thanks, Susie. KJ4WKD here. You asked for comments on the HTs. I also have the Oshin HT. That is a great little radio. Dual band, 2 meter and 440. Very inexpensive and just excellent. And I know you have one. But on 2 meters and, of course, I'm not sure you're going to cover it, but mobile radios is the way to go as well. And you can get the VHF and UHF for mobile, and of course HF as well. So another opportunity is mobile, and putting up the right antennas, whatever. Let me drop a second. But on the HTs, whether it's you know, you can get a base unit with about 50 watts and do a lot of things on say 2 meters. You can put an outside antenna onto that. You can ramp it up with an amplifier. You can do a lot of things. And here in my town, we have a really good club, and we operate a repeater. And we have nets going on. We have two-wheel mobile a motorcycle net. We have a technical forum, news and info net. A lot of things are done here on our repeater like we do in the South Cars, VOIP. And it's almost like HF. I guess what I would say is that I would second that opinion that an HT 2 meter is a good, inexpensive way to break into amateur radio. And back to you in 1SUZ. Susie, take it back. KJ4WKD.
Well, thanks very much, Jim. And yes, I know your repeaters in your town are very active. and which makes an HT a really good alternative. The repeater action here is dead. We have very little going on our 2-meter repeaters, and so basically I needed to turn to HF. But great, thanks for coming aboard, Jim, and sharing that. So let me break with you, and let me ask if there's any other stations that would like to make any more comments about HTs and what they have. If you do, come on aboard now.
Do you have room for one more? Lima, Charlie, Bravo.
I have room for you, George, anytime. Thank you so much. KW4, Lima, Charlie, Bravo, come on aboard.
Well, Susie, I started out with an HT there. Why? Because, you know, and it was a decent HT at the time, and I figured to start out that way because I just didn't know how long I was going to stay in ham radio. So, you know, I started out small, and it worked out great. And, you know, Jim had mentioned, and also you just mentioned too, you know, there's so many accessories nowadays that you can get for HT. You know, you can get your speaker mic there, and I heard a comment about it getting hot, you know, on long conversations. Well, you know, that's what them battery clips are for. I mean, those side clips, so you can put it on your side and you don't have to hold it with a speaker mic. But there's a connector that you could screw on the top where the antenna goes. So you could also get you a mobile type a mic and set it up. I set mine up on top of the refrigerator, you know, when I got started. But there's all kind of ways you can play with a HT. You could even get your little amplifier to hook up, and you know, that puts you up tight and out of sight. But I started out with one, and you know, I'm still hungry for the hobby, so we keep adding this and adding that. So just to throw my nickel in there. Good net.
Well, thank you so much, George. And I know you're an antenna guy, but I'm not sure you could answer this question for me. But what kind of antenna do you have your HT set up for? I'm sure it's not a tower like what you normally build, but I'm sure it's something different than the rubber duck. Can you tell me?
No, ma'am. The way I'm set up now, all I do have is a rubber duck, and I'm right at and usually 1/4 watt. Because I'm right at the repeater and it doesn't take a whole lot. But, you know, when I'm, if I didn't have a mobile unit, you know, and once upon a time I didn't have one, I would take my HT with me. And, like I said, I bought a connector that screwed into a mobile antenna, and I took it a mobile and with me there. You could also buy a little plug that you could hook in the side and hook in your cigarette lighter and run it off your cigarette lighter. So it's easy for me to hit the repeater with my HT because I am the repeater. You know, and I could boost it on up to 5 watts with a rubber ducky and hit the town south of me. So, you know, basically, I use the rubber duck around the house.
Well, thanks very much, George. And, yes, the rubber duck, and I also had a different antenna that I hooked up with my HT as well. But rubber duck is standard, and it works really well, except if you're in the car, I guess. So let me break with you, George, and let me pick up Gordon, KY6V. Gordon, come on aboard.
Hey, thanks, Susie. KY6V here. I just wanted to interject a couple of thought-provoking comments. You know, an HT has its place. And one of our smaller size mobile radios has its place, too. And generally speaking, I would suggest for a newcomer to think of a mobile radio before a handheld. I see a handheld, and I use a handheld in a convention environment. You go to a hamfest. You're talking to all of your friends that are around the acreage of the hamfest on whatever simplex frequency you guys decided to use. The other thing that a handheld really comes into handy with is if you're running an Echolink linking system or a repeater system, for that matter, like George is running. You have another radio now that's attached to your computer, that's attached to Echolink, that is attached to the world. But you can have a small handheld in your back pocket that you can walk around the house, into the kitchen, into the garage, or outside into the backyard, and still communicate. But I will say very honestly, for a newcomer, that they should consider a reasonably priced, and in most cases equal to or cheaper than a full-born handheld, a mobile radio. They can stick it in the car, they can use it at the house, they've got power. Let me buy a nickel here for a moment. George alluded to a very good point, and that was that there are amplifiers available on the market. They can take a handheld's wattage output and run it up to about 160 watts. Mirage has a couple of these. 2.5 watts in, 160 watts out. So that's another avenue. You could use a handheld, set it for 2.5 watts, pump it into a 160-watt amplifier that you're either using at the car or in the house, and save the cost of a full mobile-type base station radio. Back to you, Susie, KY6V, over.
Oh, very good, Jordan. Thanks very much. Can you tell me, now I'm not familiar with how to do this, but can you tell me how to put that amplifier, how to hook that up onto the HT?
Well, it's pretty straightforward, Susie. Hey, I see that Mr. Carolina, North Carolina, no, Alabama, Alabama Rat has just come aboard. You better nail this guy before he runs away on us. Hello, John. It's very simple. You just run a piece of coax between the output connector on your handheld to the input of the amplifier. The output of the amplifier got a piece of coax that runs to your antenna, either your mobile antenna or your fixed station antenna. The amplifier requires a 12-volt power supply to feed it. You use the batteries in your handheld to operate that portion. So it's a piece of hose here and a piece of hose there and glory on the other end. Go ahead, Susie, over.
Oh, thanks very much, Gordon. That explains it, and it does seem to be a very easy process to do that. And adding that amplifier also makes that HT a lot more useful, and I think I might be considering that. But that's a good choice for your first ham radio. And tonight's TNT, let me remind everybody, is buying your first ham radio. We encourage everybody to share what they bought for their first ham radio and also to share what their thoughts are. So with that said, let me do one last round of call for anybody who'd like to make any more comments on HTs and what they think is the best one. So come aboard now. Okay, so let's move along. You know, we've got the HT, and what would a next radio be? Maybe another good choice. Well, that will probably be, in my mind, a mobile FM transceiver, which I actually got this year. Mobile FM transceivers don't necessarily have to be used in a vehicle. They can be used as fixed stations or even portable with the proper battery, still making a mobile a fine choice for emergency communications if you're in Aries or Saturn. Obviously not as a portable and easy to deploy as a handheld, mobiles deployed in vehicles and fixed stations often benefit from better antenna installations and power availability, which also means the added expense of installing the antennas and the feed line, as well as the purchase of a power supply. While still limited in the technical aspect of amateur radio, mobile FM transceivers are often the choice for full-time packet nodes for the data savvy. Interestingly enough, Tentec still sells a 2-meter mobile kit for those who would like to build their own gear, although, for what you get, it's rather expensive compared to what you can buy already made. But that, of course, is Tentec. Most mobiles are great for those who like to rag chew with other operators in their local area. From the fixed station or the vehicle, they are much better at this task than a handheld. Not only do they offer more power for direct communications, mobiles are designed with large heat sinks to dissipate the heat generated during those long-winded conversations. While I've enjoyed driving to a hilltop and working stations with my mobile transceivers, they are not going to have a range considered DX-friendly without linking to repeaters or echo links. But a mobile transceiver is a good choice for a lot of people. Actually, this year when RHT and HF radio went on the blink, my mobile radio became our base station here. And I use that for communicating with everybody and doing DX. And I simply hooked it up to what we have in the side yard, which is a dipole antenna. But mobile transceivers are great choices, and you don't necessarily have to have them in the car. And also, with removable faceplates, you can also transport them to other places as well. You can take them in and out of the car as needed. A lot of people who do summits on the air have mobile transceivers, and also other people who go on IOTAs, islands, they take their mobile transceivers. So let me drop it here and call for anybody who'd like to make some comments on mobile transceivers. Please come aboard now.
Romeo Alpha Tango.
Well, hello, John. Thanks for coming aboard. W8RAT, Ratman, come on aboard.
Well, good evening, Susie. Good evening, Gordon, Kathy, and everyone else out there, all my South Cars friends. This is Whiskey 8 Romeo Alpha Tango, and I'm almost getting home now. Got to be careful on these windy roads up and down the hills. They're kind of narrow, too. So, anyway, good evening, all. Right now, at this point in time, I have signal, and probably in a matter of a minute or so, I probably will not. But at this point in time, I do, so I wanted to get in there and say good evening. One little thing, when you're calling on people and iPhones and Droids are in the mix, give them an extra second or two, because by the time you unkey and we can get a screen that we can key to, it takes a little bit longer than a microphone key. So just a little hint there, a little help for us users. Anyway, talking about radios. First radios, my first ham radio was a Yaesu 7800 for the mobile and 2 meter 440 mix, and I really liked it. I tell you what, though, after having some ICOMs, the ICOMs I think are easier, more user-friendly for programming. But then again, I've got another Yaesu that I won at a ham fest in Okeechobee, and that one was very easy to program, but some of them are kind of tricky. But it's all in the user, I guess. Anyway, Susie, appreciate you picking me up, and again, just wanted to say hi to everybody. I hope I'm coming through all right, but I'm probably about to lose signal, so I'm going to jump out. Say good evening to everyone. I hope everyone's doing well. Gordon, thank you very much for the comment there. Nice hearing your voice again. Maybe we'll have to get together. Hopefully we'll have some internet here real soon, and we can actually chat for a bit. We can talk about what's been going on and how we're doing up here. Susie, take care. Thank you very much again. From Whiskey 8, Romeo Alpha Tango, back to Net Control.
Contact, Susie.
Go right ahead, Six Victor.
I'll make this short. Hey, John, you dude, Melbourne Saturday, you know. I don't think it's going to be a pleasant get-together, only in the respect that the weather is supposed to be hellacious. High winds and lots of rain. Tailgates are really going to be pounded. But we're going to miss you, John. Do you want me to stick a tower up in the middle of the inside of the building with a sign on it, John says hello, over?
Hey, I'll send you a whole bunch of business cards. You can hand them out, too. I appreciate that, Gordon. Yeah, Yeah, we're not going to make that. We'll be in Orlando, though, so that's the big one. We're not missing Orlando. That's what got me started in what I'm doing, and I have to say, Gordon, it's taken off up here even more so than it did down there, so it's working out pretty good. The full-time job that I got now, the new job, is actually working out very well. Also, and this thing here, I'm working till 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, just about every night, putting things together. So a lot of things going on. Hey, Gordon, we appreciate it. Good to hear your voice, man. Good to talk to you personally, face-to-face there, so to say. We appreciate everything that you've done. You take care, and we'll talk to you again real soon. KY6VW8RAT.
Got to miss you down here, John, for the Melbourne. But yeah, you'll be there in our thoughts. Susie, John has a sideline of building risers for towers and doing very well in that department. Just to bring things up to date for you, possibly, Susie, and he visits all the ham fests that take place that he can. He normally has a booth in the ham fest with a short tower and the razors mounted on it, and so on and so forth. And that's what we were talking about. We're going to miss him here in Melbourne. Go ahead, Susie. KY6V, over.
Oh, very good, Gordon. And thanks, John, again, for coming aboard. And that's great. That's great. And speaking of the Ham Fest, that's another great place to chit-chat and talk to other people about what to pick out for your first radio. Ham Fests and clubs are great sources for information. And speaking of information, John is on his iPhone, which is really an interesting new technology. And as far as your first rig, even your iPhone or any of these Droid phones will work well. Here we are talking to him, you know, he's in Georgia and we're in wherever we are through Echolink. So even if you can't afford a rig, an HT, anything, most of us have iPhones or other type of smartphones that we can use. But with that said, let me move on. Because we were talking about mobile FM transceivers, there are other things we have to choose. We want to know about mono bands, dual bands. Which should we choose to own? Many say that mono bands, dual bands, and all that are one's personal choice and budget. But if you don't know much about it, how are you going to choose? While dual and tri-band radios are more expensive than mono band rigs, what the new ham should invest in isn't always so clear. For emergency communications, it would be best to check with your local Aries or Races members, if that's what you're into, and find out what repeaters and simplex frequencies are used and avoided. Most Aries local communications are handled on 2 meters, but if the local emergency services are using VHF high band, it may be difficult to operate it in shared locations or on shared towers. So the local amateur radio volunteers may have decided that 70 centimeters is best. That's something that you need to check. Multiband radios do offer more room for experimenting with antennas. There's 6-meter antennas, 1-watt carriers, and all that like. So you can get a lot out of multiband radios with great antennas. We don't want to tie up a widely used 2-meter repeater in your area with a long conversation or a big round table, and having another band option besides just the 2 meters. Which would mean you get a multi-band radio, may make it a little bit better so that you can talk to more people. Many clubs put repeaters on several bands at the same site, making the coverage fairly predictable. Multi-band radios with 6 meters and a good external antenna can sometimes work DX as well, via sporadic E propagation, which we all learned when we were doing our extra testing. While this won't happen all the time, especially for FM, it does happen, and you can find yourself talking to stations several hundred miles away. And I talk a lot about DX because I am a DX addict, and I loved hunting for DX. Oops, time down. Let me drop it here. Okay, so monoband, dual band, anyone have any comments? Gordon, KY6V, can you tell us a little bit about monobands or dual bands?
Well, I'll try. Susie, KY6V here. I had just wandered into the kitchen, just got back when you threw it at me. You know, the flexibility is just great, and the availability of 440 repeaters and 2-meter repeaters are great. So, you know, if you're stuck with a handheld, it's just 2 meters as an example. You're coming up a little bit short, or a straight 2-meter mobile radio. I think in the long run, you know, you're going to end up with a dual band. You're just going to get there. So why start with something short? You know, go for gusto and make it happen. As far as atmospheric ducting, it happens quite a bit through the course of the year on VHF and UHF. This is where the cloud structure, the atmospheric conditions get to a point where they start bending your radio waves, and it is just absolutely delightful. It's exhilarating to be sitting in front of your radio when this band is wide open, and you're talking to Kimbuktu, 1,000 miles away, where normally you're lucky to get 30 miles out on VHF. I can recall years ago coming out of work one night, getting into the car, turning on the radio, running about 25 watts on 2 meters. And hearing this guy in New York, and I said, "Hey, bud, can you copy me?" And we talk for a half an hour. You don't do that very often, but it really puts a spark in your pistol. Go ahead, Suzanne. KY6V, over.
Well, very good, Gordon. Yes, I haven't experienced that yet, but I have heard about that. And that's something that I would really enjoy doing myself. It's really interesting to look for that. So thanks very much for sharing that. And let me ask if anybody else would like to comment on monoband, dual band, or any other thing about your first HF or regular radio. Come on aboard now if you have any comments about picking out your first radio.
Victor, Queen Victor.
Lima, Charlie, Bravo.
Oh, very good. The net recognizes Victor, Queen Victor, Chris, and George, Lima, Charlie, Bravo. Chris, come on aboard with your comments.
Suzanne and group, welcome. Here from Philadelphia. Name is Chris. Beautiful weather we're having up here in Philly. We got 1 week with no rain, and we need to dry out up here. So on the two-band issue, I don't remember this being too much emphasized in the study material, but I'm pretty well set up for both 2-meter and 70 centimeter. And what I've picked up, just, you know, I don't write down the facts and the data. If you're on the road, on a hilly road, and you're working 2 meters, 2 meters likes to follow the hills, the ups and the downs on a gentle up and down. And but if you got a straight shot line, 440 is the way to go. That's my non-scientific observation. KB3DQB here.
Well, thanks, Chris. I really appreciate that. And back in the day when I started, 440 used to be very active in this area. Right now, it's not so much active. Is it? Do you use 440 regularly on your repeaters? Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, about 80% of the time. I have a nice Kenwood 71-something radio, and it does, it's not big power. I think it's max 50 watts, but it works fine. And my local network has repeaters that they hook together, one on 440 and one on 2 meter. And so you get people who are out driving and people who were on their home base. So, but that's been an observation over the last half a year. I've only been licensed for half a year, so, you know, I'm just learning about it day by day. KB3BQB.
Well, thanks very much, Chris. And yes, as we have been talking about here, HTs are great choices for your first radio, but we've got other choices too, and we'll be going over a little bit of that tonight too. But let me break with you, Chris. Thanks for coming aboard too. And let me pick up George. Lima Charlie Bravo, come on aboard, George.
KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo. Well, Sue, you know, I've had a mono band, and I've had a dual band, and I've had a multi band, and each one of them, you know, they served a purpose there. When I outgrew the mono band, which, you know, I still do have, it's great backup. Then I went to the dual band, which allows you to either be on the 2-meter or the 440, or if you want one with the 220 side of things, all that's possible. You know, it could be set up to, and well, some of them can, the dual band to cross repeat. And, you know, with the right configuration, you can take that little old handheld you've got and configure that to work with that dual bander in the mobile. And if you so desire, you can go in the grocery store and chit-chat, or just go away from your mobile. Actually, what you're doing, you're transmitting to the mobile, and the mobile is transferring it to the repeater. And you also got that a multi-bander, which you can do the same thing, but you've got that extra band to play with. So all of them has their purposes, and they all been good radios for me, good learning experiences. And, you know, I'll probably try the next one that comes around, if it's got three or four, you know, the more I can learn and experiment with the equipment, the more I'll stay with it. Like I said from the get-go, you know, I got an HT to start, because I didn't know how long I was going to stay hungry. But evidently, I'm still hungry for amateur radio, and there's so many facets of it. So, you know, I think a dual band is a good radio, mobile radio to purchase. And, you know, like you said, you either put it in the car or take it in the house. And the more you get familiar with it, the more you'll get to like it. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Well, thanks very much for your comments, George. They're always welcome, and you always have a wealth of information, which is what makes this kind of net really very valuable, especially for people who are looking to buy their first rigs. And I see that we have a couple new people on board here. We have M6SPI, who is Steve in Norfolk, England, and we also have Eric, who's N3TUX, both new hams looking for some new equipment. So before we talk a little bit more to them, let me pick up Gordon, KY6V, and have some comments from Gordon. Gordon, come on aboard, please.
Hey, thanks, Susie. I'll make it short here. Gordon, KY6V. You know, George raises a great point, and that's cross-banding with your mobile radio. A lot of the hams are not familiar with that technique and availability. But let me give you a quick overview of that. You have in your automobile a dual band radio, 2 meters and 440, let's say. And that radio is capable of crossbanding. So what you do is you set up a frequency on 440, put the mobile radio into crossband, and every time it hears an incoming signal on 440, it will transmit to 2 meters. And you can do this in reverse, but nevertheless, this is the example that I'm using. So now you leave your radio on in the car. It's parked out in Walmart's parking lot, and you walk into Walmart, and this is a super Walmart, you know, a big building. You can go any place in that building, pick up your handheld, talk to your car out in the parking lot. You're running a quarter of a watt or 1 watt on your handheld. It's being received by your mobile equipment and retransmitting you back out on the other band, let's say 2 meters, to the 2 meter repeater. You don't lose a stroke. Go ahead, Susie. And there's a couple of guys in here that are looking for new equipment, so please pick them up. KY6V, over.
Well, thanks, Gordon. That's really a great explanation on how to do that. And, you know, those are things that I haven't even done with mine that I really find interesting. And like I said, this is the way to go. Join the net here, talk to the experienced people, and we all learn a lot of different things on these nets. So well, let me break with you, Gordon, and let me welcome a couple of new people here. I want to welcome Steve, M6SPI, and Eric, M3TUX. And let me pick up Steve, M6SPI. Steve, would you like to come aboard and maybe ask some questions to the experienced people out here about what you're looking for in your first rig? Steve, come on aboard.
This is M6SPI. Thanks for that, N1SUZ. Yeah, I'm contemplating buying my first set of equipment. I'm only 3 weeks into passing my license, so I haven't bought any equipment yet. But been using Echolink via a mobile phone, and so far been gaining a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge. And I'm contemplating buying two pieces of equipment. One, a cheap handheld, which is about 50-60 quid, which is a Chinese brand from via eBay, and then later on a Yasu. I think it's for 957, something like that, which is a nice, small, compact, nice mobile rig. Reason for it is that by actually having the two, you can count, like what the previous order said, you can actually link one to the other and then have one mobile and one with you, and then you can actually use the bigger one to boost your signal. And even maybe I'll get onto a repeater and get onto Echolink. So that's what my plans are, unless I hear differently, and I'd rather spend the time and actually look into it than spend twice and make a mistake. M6SPI, back to you, Susan, N1SUZ.
Well, thanks, Steve, for coming aboard. And yes, sounds like you're on your way. And only 3 weeks with your license, it looks like you have a wealth of information behind you anyway. Is there any questions you'd like to ask anybody out here, anything that you're wondering about as far as purchasing any additional equipment? Because we've got quite a few people out here that can help you. So, Steve, if you've got any questions, come on aboard and ask them away.
Cheers for that, Susan. Currently, no, because my knowledge is so limited that I'm still gaining the information. So if I carry on listening and have any info or any questions, I'll come back in. Otherwise, I'll just listen and I'll actually text the question so that therefore you can pick it up. This is M6SPI listening, but can I just have the names and locations of the people on the link so I can put it onto my logbook? M6SPI, back to you, Susan.
Well, this is N1SUZ, and thanks, Steve, and definitely keep listening, because we've got a little bit left here and a wealth of information. And anytime you come on to South Cars, you'll learn a lot, and everyone is very, very friendly. So I encourage you and welcome you to come aboard anytime mm-hmm. with any of these nets. And Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, we're here, and we've got other things that you may be interested in well. So let me break with you, and let me pick up Eric, M3TUX. I want to welcome you to TNT and South Cars, and let's hear what you're looking for your first rig, Eric.
Well, thank you, Susie. I appreciate you picking me up here. I am a new ham. I've only been a ham for about a year now. I got my check in October of last year and then went up to general about a month later. I do have a 2 meter 440 handheld, a Wushan, which I really like a lot. It was cheap, and if I break it, I'm really only out $100. What I'm looking for is really my first HF rig. I've got a lot of different ideas and different model numbers out there. I'm looking at, you know, the Kenwoods and the Yaesus, and there's an ICOM out there. The Elcraft KX3, kilowatt X-ray 3, looks very interesting in that it would it would be both a mobile and a station for my house. So I just kind of wanted to get the question I really have for the group is, what are the advantages of sort of getting that all-in-one, not necessarily down to the VHF and UHF, but all-in-one HF rig down to, you know, covering 160 down to 10 or even 6, but also being able to take that on the road or backpacking, back to net, N3 TUX. I'm still getting used to my new call, N3.
Well, thanks, Eric, N3 TUX. Yeah, it's a really nice call, too. But yeah, this is the perfect question for the members out here, because I know almost everybody has HTs out there and HFs as well. I have an Elecraft K3 transceiver that I like very much. It's got a lot of bells and whistles in it too, but that's something that you need to also look into. You know, pre-tuners, tuners, power, and all that. So with that. And this is really the next topic here. Let's talk HF. That's the big guns. So let me throw this out to the members out there, Gordon, George, Jim, and anybody else who has an HF rig. And let's offer some help to Eric about what's out there and what he should be looking for. So come on aboard with your HF talk.
Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Whiskey, Kilo Delta.
Okay, NET recognizes KW4, Lima Charlie Bravo, George, and KJ4, WKD, Jim. And two of our members that I know, they have HF rigs out there. So let me pick up George first, and let's talk HF, George.
Well, thank you, Susie. This is awful controversial part of the subject there. You know, it's to each his own, but my personal... deal there. Well, I have two ICOM 706 Mark II G's, and I think it's the best bang for the buck. I have been listening to them for years, you know, and there's some modifications that as you learn more about amateur radio, you can go in and do them yourself, or you could have someone in the business do it for you as far as to expand the frequency ranges. That's possible. So if you are affiliated with one of these special groups, it can be done. But to me, I think the Mark IIG is the best bang for the buck. I also have a ICOM 7000. I did a little mod on it now. I could even play with the TV. I could even open the TV screen up on it there. I mean, there's so many things that you can do with these radios nowadays. But my personal opinion, and also it makes a great bass. You know, you can just jerk it out of the car. It also has a detachable head, a remote head. You know, I think you could place that in the car. In fact, I put the 7000 in the trunk of the car, and I've got the head sitting up on the dash, and I did the same thing with the 706. So there's some nice features, and you know, keep that in mind, and ask people about it, get the opinions, but I think that's the best bang for the buck in my viewpoint, you know, getting started.
Well, thanks very much, George, for sharing that. And before I let you go, let me ask you what you think about some of the features of your radio, the 706. And this really has to do with picking up any radio, I guess. What do you think about filters and, you know, built-in antenna tuners and all that? Do you think it's worth having a radio with the built-in antenna tuner? And what kind of filters do you look for when you were looking for your radio, or doesn't it matter to you?
Well, you'll have to add the different filters on it there, Susie. But, you know, when the conditions is so bad, you got to start engaging this filter and that filter. Well, you know, it's it's not joy for me, you know. I've never had to go to anything else except for what the radio's built-in filter, this new 7000. You know, it's got some excellent filtering, the RIT, you name it, it's got it. And ICOM also, it's got quite a few features. You can cross-band it, you could you know, be talking on, hearing on one frequency, transmitting on the other frequency, and hearing, you could set each individual speaker as to what frequencies you're listening to. There's so many bells and whistles. It could be set up for packet. You can do so many things with it there. I just do a Google search and you know, check it all out, the different availability. I don't know if Mr. Six Victor wants to mention. I think he's had one or two there, and it's a sweet little radio.
Well, thanks very much, George. And yes, I see Gordon has a comment here. So let me pick up Jim first, since he was next on the roster here, and then we'll go back to Gordon. Jim, KJ4WKD, would you like to share your opinion on HF radios? Jim, come on aboard.
Oh, thank you. KJ4WKD. And I'm with you, Susie. It's all about features, I would say. You start talking to hams, and you're going to get Kenwood guys, ICOM guys, JSU guys, whatever. And really, first thing I would say is how much money do you have to spend? What is your budget? And from there, you want to look at what you want the radio to do or not do, what bands you want to cover. And by the way, it's probably going to have HF, essentially HF, maybe 10 through or 6 through on your HF radio, and you'll have something separate for VHF, real VHF, or the high VHF and UHF. But what kind of antenna are you going to use? Are you going to need a built-in tuner? Or can you get by with a built-in tuner? My first radio was a Kenwood hybrid. And two things about that, you've got to load that, load those finals with your tubes. And you've got to learn how to do that. Fortunately, I didn't really do it. I didn't transmit on that radio. And it had a analog display for tuning. Now, I now have a fully solid-state radio, and I don't have to worry about those things. I have a digital display. Little things like that that are very fundamental without getting into filters and all of those things, but just the fundamental things. Look for the best deal. Do you want a used radio or a new radio? And on and on and on. Susie, back to you. And if there's more, we'll add it later. KJ4WKD, back to Net Control in 1SUZ.
Oh, very good, Jim. Thank you so much for coming aboard with that comment. And yep, budget is a big constraint for a lot of people, and you should just get the best you can buy for the money that you have. And I see that we have a question here from Steve, who says, or asks, does the rig or the antenna count for more important? When I was at the ARRL and talked to the technical guys there, they told me that the antenna was one of the most important things. No matter how great your rig is, if your antenna isn't any good, you're not going to get anywhere. But with that said, I will put that out to everybody out there to maybe help Steve with that decision. And I'm going to pick up Gordon, KY6Z, who's been patiently waiting with his comment. Gordon, come on aboard, please.
Hey, thanks, Susie. KY6V here. Boy, I couldn't stand up taller on that ARRL comment that the antenna's number one, you know. I retired out of the broadcast business and television. And we had general managers throughout the fleet that said, hey, the most important thing is from the antenna down, and you all remember that. I just wanted to mention the 706 is a good radio. I will, and I don't want to offend George in his comment, its receiver is not as sensitive as some other models, but works very well. The point that I wanted to make and hopefully get some stimulation of thinking here, Susie, is that a built-in tuner in an HF radio normally will tune very effectively any impedance mismatch from about 125 ohms down. And if your antennas that you're utilizing are 50 or 75 ohm antennas, it's going to do a grand job. When you start playing with multi-band antennas, such as a G5RV and some of the others that are on the market, or even if you build them on your own, the impedance is going to be considerably higher on some bands than 125 ohms. And this internal antenna tuner is just not going to cut it. It's not going to make the grade. And this is where you need an external tuner. So what needs to be thought about is what kind of antenna are you going to be using, and do you have to rely on the internal tuner, or do you need something external? To you, Susie, from KY6V, over.
Well, thank you very much, Gordon, for pointing that out. And yes, you know, buying the rig is one thing, but you do need an antenna, and there are a lot of considerations with that. Dual band antenna, dipole, all sorts of things to consider. Which brings me to also mention that Gordon, KY6V, and George and a few others had done an antenna podcast, an antenna TNT, a few weeks back, about a month ago. And we are coming up to Antennas Part 2 in 2 weeks, with Gordon leading the march and telling us more and more about antennas and how to choose one and what antennas are available. Mm-hmm. Part 2. So for everybody out there, Eric and Steve, if you're interested in buying your first rig, you'll want to listen to the Antenna Part 2 TNT that's coming up in 2 weeks. So anyway, with that said, let me open it up to the floor and see if anyone else has any comments about HFs and dual band or single band or antennas. Maybe George, KW4, Lima Charlie Bravo, has some information that he can share on antennas as well. Come on aboard now, please.
Lima Charlie Bravo.
Very good, George. Thank you so much for coming aboard. The floor is yours.
Thank you, ma'am. KW4, Lima Charlie Bravo, for ID purposes. Steve asked a question about antennas, and multi-band antennas. Well, you know, here again, we need to find out, are we talking 2 meter, 440, or 6 meters, or guess what? Yes, they are multi-band antennas for that group range, and I really don't feel where a built-in antenna tuner in a radio, it doesn't address that. Now, when you get into HF, I think we're talking something else. But there are multi-band HF antennas, and you know, this is where, you know, Gordon also had mentioned it would be best to rely on an external antenna tuner than just the antenna tuner that's built into the radio. But to answer your question, Steve, yes, I mean, there is bukus of antennas. I mean, you've got them going up one way and down the other way, and multifaceted. You've got, you know, slow scan TV antennas. I mean, there's so many facets, you know, to try to cover tonight, but like Sue said, there's an upcoming a get-together on antennas there, and I'm quite sure a lot of information will be covered there. Maybe Mr. Six Victor would like to comment on my statement as to the multifacets of antennas, but first you got to figure out what you're going to do, and then you know, or what you want, and then set out there and learn everything you can about it there, which I see that you're trying to do it tonight.
Well, thank you so much, George, for those comments. And thanks to everybody who's joining in tonight and helping us new hams, and I'm fairly new myself, really, in getting involved in all this, helping choose our rigs and what we need to do to actually get them up and operating. And let me call on Gordon and see if he does have any comments on what you said, George. This is November 1, Sierra United Zulu. And Gordon, KY6Z, any comments on George's? Okay, I guess Gordon has stepped out for a second. So let's continue on with our HF choices. Now, it's 9 minutes past the hour, and we've been on here for an hour and 9 minutes, which is really great. And we're talking about buying your first radio. And tonight we've talked about handheld radios, HTs, and the variety that we have out there, and really the easiest and simplest way to get into the hobby. But also there's mobile radios, which can also be used for your base station. And we talked about dual bands, single modes, and all that. And ultimately, an HF rig. And we all have different rigs for different reasons. You need to choose your rig depending on what you can afford and the bells and whistles. I've got the Elecraft K3, other people, the ICOM, which is a great, great radio. And I've heard a lot of people with that also. So let me throw out the question to everybody out there. And why don't you tell us what your rig is? We've got some choices here, and Jim, KJ4WKD, can you come aboard and tell us what your rig is? This is N1SUZ.
Okay, Susie, thank you. I wasn't, didn't have the headset on, but okay, KJ4WKD here. I am using, on HF, I'm using a Kenwood TS-140S, and by the way, that rig is probably, or it appears to be, I won't say it's necessarily designed as mobile, but it could be easily mounted in mobile, and it's a compact solid-state radio, and I use it base, but it could go in the car at some point, so it's one of those that's, either way, it can be a mobile radio. And again, it's totally solid state. And my first one was a Kenwood TS-520SE, and that was the hybrid Kenwood. That's a lot more complicated than this this solid state that I have now. Back to you.
Well, thanks very much, Jim, for adding that comment and sharing what radio that you have. So let me throw it once more back out there, and anybody who would like to come aboard and share what HF radio that they have. TNT is about buying your first radio, but let's see if there's anybody who'd like to share what radio they have right now. If you do, come on aboard with your radio. Okay, I'm thinking that might be Dennis, KB9RRN. I think I heard you try to come in. Dennis, if that was you, come on aboard.
N1SUZ in the net, KB9RRN. Oh, good evening. Yeah, I think I doubled with the WA3 NNA machine, so we may want to check there and see if we had a station trying to come in. On the topic of HF radios, my current HF radio is a ICOM IC718. I've had this radio since 2006, maybe 2007, somewhere in there. Finally got it on the air in 2009. I've got it paired with a LDG IT100 auto tuner, and it's connected to a G5RV out in the backyard. And I would recommend it. It's a very basic HF radio. It's a great starter rig. I don't know what they're going for now, and I couldn't tell you what I paid for mine, but I bought mine basically new, used. It was new, pretty much in the box. It had only been used a couple of times, and got a pretty good deal on it. And it's a nice radio. I like it. Definitely for what it is, it's a 100-watt transmitter, sideband, and it'll run 40 watts on AM. Pretty much everything you need to get started in an HF-based transceiver. My first HF radio which I kind of wish I still had, was a Kenwood TS-120S. And that was a nice radio as well. Had a lot of fun with that radio on 10 meters back in the late 90s when the band was really cooking on 10. And that was a good radio as well. Both of them fairly simple, not a lot of advanced features. Obviously, the 718's got more advanced features than the old Kenwood did, but both were solid-state radios and could run them off a 25 or 30-amp power supply at full power and do pretty much everything you want to get started in HF. So I'll toss it back to you and let you, I don't know, if, like I said, I think there was somebody on WA3NNA, so let you carry on. I'll be listening. And 1SUZ, KB9RRN.
Oh, very good, Dennis. Thanks for sharing that. And let me ask you before you go, when you picked out your first radio, was there anything in particular that you looked for when you were buying your first radio?
Well, my first HF radio, not really. I got a good deal on it from a local ham who lives about 2.5 miles away from me. He sold it to me for a fair price, and it was in great shape. Came with a hand mic and a desk mic and a matching power supply. And I liked it because it was simple. There wasn't anything fancy about it. It did have a, I don't even think it was a LED. I think, yeah, it was an LED frequency counter on it, but analog meter. And that's what I tried to stick with on the ICOM 718 as well. I liked it because it's a simple radio and not a whole heck of a lot of advanced features. You can plug in a few different filters to it and stuff like that, but I like to stick with simplicity. For me, it's the simpler the better. Nothing too crazy or outlandish, and tends to be a little cheaper that way too. Back to you, N1SUZ, KB9RRN.
Well, thanks very much, Dennis. And yes, it's important to like talk to other people and see what they really wanted. And I think simplicity is a good thing, especially with your first radio. It can be very frustrating if you get a radio that has a lot of bells and whistles and you can't figure out things, even on HTs, when there's a lot of different things to do with them. But simplicity sounds like a great, great notion. So let me break with you, Dennis. And I think that might have been Chris, VQV, that was coming through that repeater. So, Chris, was that you? Come on aboard if it was. This is N1SUZ. Okay, the station behind the Newtown Square repeater, you had no audio, but I saw that you were trying to come aboard. So let me try it one more time and see if we can get you. N1SUZ, and the floor is yours. All right, I guess we're having a little problem there, so we'll try to pick you up before we end the night here. So it's 17 minutes past the hour, and I think it's we'll try to wrap this up. Let me first ask if there's any additional comments about HFs, handhelds, dual bands, or antennas, and then we can summarize what we've learned tonight. So this is N1SUZ, and tonight's TNT is buying your first radio. We've covered a lot of ground tonight. And we can't cover everything in this, but we can also give a lot of suggestions and opinions about what's good and what to look for, and affordability or in bells and whistles, all that kind of stuff. So let me throw it out to the floor and see if anybody would like to make some final comments about what they bought or what they would recommend to other first buyers. This is N1SUZ.
Info, Susie, 6 Victor.
Very good, Victor. Come on aboard.
Yeah, Eric, I believe, had a question on multi-band antennas. That's SPI, Madame, over.
Yes, he did, Gordon. And if you would like to help him with that, he wanted to know about different antennas or multi-bands. Go right ahead, Gordon.
All right, let me see if he's still there. Eric, are you still there? And good evening, sir. Gordon here, KY6V, over.
KY6V, this is November 3TUX. Yep, I was just listening along here, and when the subject of antennas came up, it occurred to me, I see a lot of ads and I hear a lot of talk about multi-band antennas, and it always struck me as being a sort of a compromise between a number of different things. If given the choice, is it better with space issues and maybe antenna restrictions in your neighborhood not being a problem, is it better to have a multi-band antenna, where you have one antenna, and it's just a simple network, or if you want to work 80, have an 80 meter antenna. You want to work 80 and 40, 180, 140, and then a 10 and a 6. There's a point at which you got to have, you can't have 15 different antennas, but where is that trade-off? Where do those two lines cross between, you know, ease of use, features, and everything just getting out of hand?
Well, I sure wish you had the opportunity, Eric, to join our get-together here on TNT several weeks back. We discussed that issue. And that's a great question. I will tell you that a multi-band antenna, efficiency-wise, is not as good as an antenna that is resonantly cut to the operating frequency of your choice. So if you want to get the maximum gusto from your antenna for, let's say, an 80 meter antenna, you want to have a resonant dipole or something equivalent to that. Multiband antennas work very efficiently and will do a nice job for you, Eric, but they will not have the overall punch, both reception-wise and transmit-wise, as a resonant and a single resonant antenna cut to your operating frequency. Does that make sense, sir? Over.
That does, and it does make sense that with anything else, purpose-built equipment always performs better than general use equipment. Obviously, you know, my wife doesn't want me to have 15 antennas, but at the same time, I live in a kind of a noisy neighborhood for 80 meters. So having something that handles just 80 would be better for me, but when it comes time, you know, for me to plunk down the money for, you know, whatever HF rig, and I really appreciate the group tonight giving out a lot of good ideas and a lot of good comments about the different rigs that they've used. That's something that I guess that decision that I have to make, and you know, the first decision I make may not be the right decision, and I think being open to that is a good thing. People want to, in today's day and age, want to plunk down their cash and walk away from it, but I'm willing to experiment, and I think that's a lot of what attracts me to the hobby in general. And 3TUX back to net.
All right, thank you very much, Eric. You know, I hesitate to get into a conversation about Kenwood's better than a Yaesu or Yaesu's better than a Linko and so on and so forth. They all have their good points and they all have weaker points. You'll listen to some people that'll say, you know, the only outstanding audio that can be produced on the ham bands comes from a Kenwood. You know, I take issue to that too. So I try to stay away from it because it's a very controversial and a very subjective type conversation. Susie, I may have been out of order here, but I thought it was, and I probably had the name wrong, but M6 SPI over there in the UK was asking a question in the text box about a dual-band, tri-band radio, and do you need a different antenna or a multi-band? So maybe we need to address this before you close, Susie. Over.
You're absolutely right, Gordon. That would be Steve, M6 SPI, and if you would like to address that question, or if Steve would like to come aboard and ask a specific question, go right ahead. Gordon, I'll send it back to you, and if Steve wants to come aboard, he can address you. This is N1SUZ.
All right, let me see if I can handle it. Thank you, Susie. M6 SPI. Steve, are you still there? KY6VN, good evening.
This is M6 SPI. Cheers to George and the group. You've given me a lot of information. Just a few quick questions. I'm contemplating buying a range of rigs, one which is a handheld, which you just actually have a normal antenna, and that would be how it would be. But then if you get one for a mobile for a car, If you buy one which is like either a single band, dual band, or tri-band, I don't know much about rigs yet, but my experience would be there'd only be one aerial input, so you'd only be able to put one in. So would you actually have to have a external connection so you can actually change it for the antenna you want? And would you need three ATUs for those? And all the other questions, so does by having that increase the amount of the additional hardware you need? And would that save money in the long term? Because if that one thing breaks, you don't have to replace your rig. Or am I thinking too protective, safety-wise? M6 SPI, back to you, George.
All right, Steve. Thank you. And that's an excellent question, sir. And it's Gordon, not George. Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, calls KY6V. Steve, let me tell you... A multiband radio, a dual band or tri-band, whatever, normally comes equipped internally with what is called a diplexer. And this diplexer directs the frequency range that you're working. Maybe 6 meters, maybe 2 meters, maybe 440, you know, UHF. So if you have a multiband antenna, and for these frequencies, you know, the VHF and UHF, there are a lot of antennas out there, but there are antennas that are vertically polarized that will operate on all three bands, and that antenna coax from the antenna can be plugged into the single coax connector. And the duplexer in the radio will filter it to the proper band that is required. It's all sort of automatic. Now, in the case, and there are some radios that do not have internal diplexers built in. And there is a cheap and inexpensive device, which is an external diplexer, where you plug these antennas in to this device with a single hose that goes to your radio that makes everything work. Does that make any sense to you, Steve? Over.
Yeah, that does. But now, if you actually have that in your three different aerials, and for some reason you don't check that dial and you put the wrong frequency in on the rig, would you cause a damage because you're actually changing the wavelength but using the wrong antenna, so therefore you're putting power out? So would you need an ATU onto each one of those bands? Yeah? Does that make sense to you? So this is back to you, George.
Yeah, okay. George is a good friend of mine over there in Orange City, Florida. And I'm Gordon, Steve, but that's okay. You can call me George anytime. I'd be very proud. Not to worry. The radios that come out today are designed to protect themselves from somebody doing what you're explaining, the possibility of happening. If the SWR is too high, it will shut down your final amplifiers and not damage the radio. This is all done automatically and internally. You don't want to do that very often. And obviously, if you do it, nothing is really going to hurt you. But you won't be hearing anybody, and you won't be talking to anybody. Does that make sense, Steve? Over.
M6SPI. Sorry, Gordon. I said George before I realized, and keyed off before. Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's the idea. I'd rather actually spend the money and actually have protection than actually have to actually continually replace the rig because I've damaged it. So that's the option I'm thinking of. Do I buy a basic rig and have external safety devices that if I do damage it, it will be the safety device which will be damaged, which will probably be cheaper to replace than the rig itself. So I don't know if there's big differences in prices of getting a basic one
where you bought, put everything else
externally.
Then actually buying one rig for everything inside it. So this is back to you, Gordon.
Okay, I see the audio level is dropping off on you for some reason. I don't know if you're just backing away from the microphone or what, Steve, but we got most of that. You know, the important thing here, sir, is to look at the radio that you're going to purchase. Make sure that it has an internal diplexer. An internal diplexer. And if it's a multi-band radio, I will probably say in most cases that it will have one. And therefore, everything will be automatic if you put a multi-band antenna in it. And if you put a single-band antenna plugged into the back of the radio, that'll work because it's going to select the proper band. I don't think you have a problem there. Susie, 31 minutes into the current hour, and thank you for a great show. We're going to have to take the bat away from the Louisville Slugger, KY6V, back to net.
I think the Louisville Slugger just struck me out here. But anyway, yes, thank you so much, Gordon, for covering those questions and for your help tonight. And thank you to George as well, and to Jim, mm-hmm. and everyone else who joined in to help all of us learn more about the first radios and what they are for us. So let me summarize a little bit here before we wrap things up. And we talked about our first radio tonight. And we covered two meters, HTs, 440s, mobile or portable rigs, which are great for the car. If you like to go hiking with your radio, that's a great one to do it for, too, or even for a base station. And then we covered the granddaddy of the rigs, the HF radio. Now, we couldn't go into ultra detail tonight, but I think we covered quite a bit of the pros and cons of different methods of what we wanted to buy. If you're in emergency communications, MCOM, or you want to join one of the ARIES or RACES, 2 meters are usually the way to go. But if we're beginning our home HF operation, maybe a mobile ring or an HF rig, something that has an antenna tuner built in so you don't have to play around with an antenna tuner, or maybe you want to learn how to do an antenna tuner. A lot of us just want to have casual local conversations in rag shoes, or maybe we want to do something more regional. We've got EchoLink with our 2 meters as well. But, you know, also there's DX, which is one of my favorite modes. And with DX, generally you need HF. And there's a lot of different bands that I make sure that I can connect to with my antenna and my rig. So there's lots of things to think about. The single band handheld will be the least expensive method to get on the air, but it's also the most limited, while the HF-VHF rig will require a larger budget, but offers possibilities to operate many aspects of amateur radio. With all the radios, there will be extra expenses beyond the cost of the radio, too. With handhelds, you'll probably want an extra battery and a charger and probably an aftermarket antenna. But with everything else, you'll need to add antennas and feed lines and power supplies for your fixed stations. So I want to thank everybody who came aboard South Cars tonight when we talked about buying our first radio. And I'll ask for final comments, and then maybe we'll wrap up the show. And maybe we'll even do a part two so we can get a little bit more in-depth here. But thanks, everybody. And if anyone has any final comments, come on aboard now.
Lima, Charlie, Bravo.
Well, the net recognizes KW4, Lima, Charlie, Bravo. George, come on aboard.
Well, thank you, ma'am, for doing a great net tonight there. Yeah, I like to say, you know, whatever you got in mind for a new a rig or however you want to get started, you know, check it out real good. Ask the folks. Go to if you have that ability, go to a radio dealer, look at the radio, you know, and figure out what your needs are going to be. And when your heart really feels good about it, you know, go for it. And ham radio, too, that's what it's all about, you know. They do have experimenters in all facets of a ham radio. And if this is what you're doing, you're experimenting with this piece of equipment. Who knows, you might come to the point one day where you'll be the one to redesign it for one of these outfits. So the best thing I can tell you, you know, if it feels good to you, then do it. The thing is that you need to do it and get started. So this is KW4 Alima, Charlie Bravo. Thank you again, too, for the net.
Well, thank you, George, for coming aboard and helping out tonight. And you are always a wealth of information, and I really appreciate it, too. So, well, with that, let me break with you, George, and see if we have any other final comments for tonight. This is N1SUZ. If you have any final comments, come on aboard now, please. Okay, I didn't quite get the call sign there, and I didn't think it was Chris. So, the station behind the Newtown Square repeater, come on aboard. Okay, the station behind the Newtown Square repeater, your audio is not good. We can't hear you. Maybe you would like to try to adjust that if you can. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get you on here. So let me give you one more try before we can see what you can do there. So Newtown Square repeater, try one more time. Okay, I guess Gordon says we're out of range with the repeater, and that's why we have that poor audio. So let me break with you and call for any other additional comments for the end of the night. This is N1SUZ.
WKD.
Jim, KJ4WKD. Come on aboard, Jim.
Just a quick comment, Susie, and really have to congratulate you big time tonight under very adverse circumstances. Great net tonight, as usual, and you were very prepared to... in for the eventuality that you wouldn't have any help, which that's what happened, and you've done a great job. It's been a great net, and I like the idea of part two, maybe focusing on HF rigs. Good idea. Let's go for that. KJ4WKD, back to you.
Well, okay, Jim. I think that's you volunteering for that, so we'll put that together. This is N1SUZ, and we'll put together that part two of tonight with HF rigs, which is what everybody really, really wants to know about, I know. So thank you very much. And with that, let me leave you behind here for a moment and make one final sweep till we get to the announcements. Anyone else left out there who would like to make a final comment this evening? Okay, seems pretty quiet out there. So it is 39 minutes past the hour, and I want to thank everybody for coming aboard and discussing our possibilities and for what our first radios will be. I want to welcome Steve, M6SPI, and Eric, N3TUX, to the net tonight, and I hope you guys come back for more entertaining nets on TNT, which is at 7 o'clock now instead of 8 o'clock. And so with that said, let me bring Jim back, KJ4WKD, and he's going to read our announcements before we close the net. Jim, come on back.
Okay, I am back, KJ4WKD here, Jim. Excuse me. Okay, let's tell everyone, and especially our newly connected stations, new members, what's happening in the near future. And of course, this has been the TNT Open Forum, and the topic has been your first rig. On Saturday, Kathy, K6SUN, and Gordon, whom you heard tonight, KY6V, will be co-hosting the Global Family Hour, I believe. I was looking at my printout here, and I cut it off before it was the title of the net, so I knew that was the Global Family Hour. That's on Saturday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and the topic is going to be, what is more important, what do you think, what is more important, education or experience, and why and what are the basic skills that you need to succeed in life. Now, you'll want to, everybody has an opinion about that, especially us older guys and gals. We have an opinion about education versus experience. I think it's both. But come aboard for that, and let me drop a sec. And I might be taking it a little long. So let's go to the Sunday Rag Queue. That's going to be at 10 a.m. On October the 9th on Sunday, which is 1400 Zulu. Once again, Kathy, K6SUN, and Gordon, KY6V, will co-host. And the topic of discussion will be, what is the hardest decision that you ever had to make? Now, everybody remembers one, so come one, come all, and let's talk about that on Sunday. Beyond that, Susie, NCS and administrative people are always needed. We really need NCS people, so please, if you're interested, contact us at VOIP@southtowers.com. Worldwide hospitality people are required to act as South Tower's ambassadors of goodwill. And for further information about that, please contact us again at VOIP@southtowers.com. Our outreach program, we've finished up all of the three levels of the licensing classes this year. We do have recordings or podcasts of those at the website, which is www.voip.stopcars.com. And in the late January of 2012, there will be an International Morse Code class, and that will be great, so come aboard for that. And with that, Susie, I'm going to shut up and send it back to you. This is KJ4WKD, back up to N1SUZ at Net Control.
Well, thanks very much, Jim. KJ4WKD, this is N1SUZ. Thanks for the announcements. And let me say that this week has been picking out your first ham radio, but next week I will not be here. I will be on vacation, and Kathy's been very quiet this evening in the background and doing lots of stuff in the text box for us. K6SUN, she will be doing the TNT next week on ham jargon. And I hope everybody comes by and listens to that one, because it should be really a fun net and really informative, actually. So, with that, this has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP, net schedules, and general information may be found at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control for this session has been N1SUZ. That's me. My name is Suzanne, and I am saying 73s to everyone out there. Thank you so much for being here tonight, and I am closing this VOIP session and returning this to normal operations. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. The net is now closed.